said your mother changed dishes. What other religious upbringing was there? You had a kosher house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did you raise your children in contrast?
In the early years of my marriage, I had a kosher house. They went to Sunday school. They went to Hebrew school. We always had the family together for the high holidays and for Passover, and I was usually the one that had them. We were six in my family, and my sister and her two children, husband, were four. They lived in Belle Vernon, and my parents, they all came to me. We always made it a big Suda or Seder, and my children knew that that was part of what you did.
When you were Jewish.
When you were Jewish. It was interesting that my nephews still remember hunting for the Afikoman. I remember them tearing my kitchen apart. They were in a Reform synagogue, but they had very, very warm memories of Passover. You never really think at the time what you're passing on to the children.
You know, it always shows up, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
How about the general upbringing? What did you do as a child, young child, versus what your children did as far as your upbringing?
You went to school. You went to Hebrew school. You took piano lessons. My mother was home, although she did go away in the summer for 2 weeks. As we got older, she had a brother and sister in California. But people didn't round around as much as they do today. I was the youngest of five. My mother was fortunate. She had help, a steady help, and on Saturday afternoons, the maid used to take me to her house. My mother would have a rest. My mother had very definite pattern to her life. She supervised. On Monday was laundry day. She supervised the laundry. On Tuesday was ironing, at which time she would mend the clothes. On Wednesday was baking day. She would bake a coffee cake and a cake. I'm not sure. Thursday was shopping, and Friday you got ready for Shabbat. She never cooked on Saturday. We always made the big meal on Friday, and on Saturday we ate the leftovers. Right. That was the pattern. Although we rode on Sabbath, we were not what you would call religious, but we were in many ways observant.
Observant, but not fanatics.
Not nearly fanatics. Not
and
even
how
what.
About your children? How about
for myself, I think I pretty well. I did stay home. certainly in the first 20 years of our marriage, except when my husband was in the army, I had a job. But the rest of the time, I was home, and I too never cooked on Shabbos, lit candles. And my children went to Hebrew school, and my husband and I were very active in the Sunday school. I was sisterhood president in Nora. We also believed that, you know, you had to help and you had to do, especially when it's such a small Jewish community, you were very important to the community.
Sure.
And we didn't go out to eat like the young people do today. Of course, it was Denora. There weren't, but nor did we have the money. I mean, you just didn't do that. And my kosher meat came from Pittsburgh then, and I had a big freezer. We didn't celebrate Sukkot the same way that they do in Pittsburgh with the Sukkot and that type of thing. It was the major holidays in Shabbos, I think. I think part of what my children do is they do believe in giving service in the community and in helping out poor people less fortunate. I feel pretty proud about that because here I'm involved in spiritual adoptions and all my children do is adopt a child.
Right, and a black one.
Well, not just that. They're very concerned for Israel and concerned for fellow Jews.
The apple doesn't fall far.
Well, it seems that's true. Some people say I'm bossy. I tell them what to do, but they do what they want. But they do a lot of things that I think are very important.
Have your children ever been to Israel?
Oh, yes.
Do any of them talk about or think about making Aliyah?
No. My youngest daughter spent 2 months there during her college years. She also had gone to the College of Jewish Studies. My older son has been there several times with missions with Young Israel or Israel Bonds. And my oldest daughter, who's a very busy career woman, came to Israel when I was there the one winter doing my volunteer work, and she was very enthusiastic and wanted to see everything. She actually lectured at Hadassah Hospital when she was there. She's an epidemiologist. And she liked it so much that the next summer she spent a month with her children there. I don't think, quite frankly, that they're interested in Aliyah, but I think they are all good supporters of Israel and Jewish causes.
That's wonderful. And the first names of your two daughters?
Deborah, who was named after the judge, and Sarah, who was Mother Sarah.
National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. My name is Marvin Herzog. My respondent's name is Jean Davis. Today is Thursday, October the 16th, 1997. Jean, let me ask you, the fact that your mother joined several organizations, even in tiny Denora, must have influenced you when you were an adult. In what organizations have you participated?
Well, in Denora, of course, I belong to B'nai B'rith and the Sisterhood. In Pittsburgh, I was an active member of B'nai B'rith and of ORT. And the Sisterhood, although not too active, and Beth Shalom Sisterhood, and of course I've been most active in Na'amat. There's one more.
Yeah. ORT is
Organization for Rehabilitation Training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that organization still in existence?
Oh yes, oh yes.
All right, in what organizations have you participated actively?
Well, I was a vice president in B'nai B'rith many years ago, and I was a vice president in ORT. And I have been a president of Na'amat Pittsburgh Council for 3 terms.
Was Na'amat...
Which was Pioneer Women, I'm sorry. So
yes.
To clarify that, yes.
Was Na'amat previously noted by another name?
Yes.
And it was why did they change that?
I wish I knew why. Well, Na'amat is an acronym meaning Working Women and Volunteers, which is the name that it goes by in Israel. And at a convention about 12 years ago, it was decided that we in the United States should use the same name. I think it was a mistake, but because Pioneer Women had name recognition by now. And people don't know. Na'amat is kind of a strange name for a United States organization.
Is Na'amat, are Na'amat chapters all over the United States?
Oh, yes. We're not only all over the United States. I belong to Hadassah, too. But we're in 16 countries in the world. We're very big in Brazil. And in Israel, every working woman is an automatic member of Na'amat. We have I believe, about 700,000 women in Israel who are Naamat members, because they get certain benefits. It's connected with the government. Yes.
Do they offer financial benefits?
The benefits that Naamat offers, we are the women's rights movement in Israel, and the goal of our organization is to elevate the status of women through child care and education. And through to achieve those results, we now have 400 daycare centers taking care of 30,000 children, and our daycare centers have been famous for the for their marvelous care. Every woman that works in the daycare center has had to have 2 years of vocational education. And China has come to study our daycare centers, and United States came to us before Head Start because we have been a model of excellent daycare, excellent and affordable. Now, Naamat pays half and the government pays half. And the parent, no, each one pays a third. Naamat, the government, and the parent. The daycare in the United States is horrible considering all the circumstances. We can hold our head up proud. We also give 500 scholarships to needy women so they can go to school, and we now have 5 shelters for the prevention of violence. And we have counseling for men and women who have had domestic problems. And with the increase in immigration and the many, many stresses that it brings and the new people coming in, are the need and the number of people has increased tremendously that are benefiting by Naamat.
How did it relate to the system of kibbutzim?
It really is not related to kibbutzim at all. The daycare centers, the mothers drop their children off, go to work, and come back and pick them up. Now, we're flexible. They open at 7 in the morning, and most of them don't close till 6 at night. We have now put in many daycare centers right next door to the industrial plant or the place or a hospital. We have a daycare center at Hadassah Hospital so the women can leave their children in Naamat Center. How does it, it's, the kibbutzim are completely different. I don't know if you're aware that the kibbutzim are not taking care of the children in separate quarters anymore. They've changed that a great deal. They have found that that was not, the parents want the children home. They are taking care of them while the women work, but they certainly do not live in separate quarters as they did when the kibbutzim were first formed.
I see. Can you describe for me, Jean, what a typical working day for you
for me
was in Israel, or is it
in Israel? Baboker, ani, in the morning, I would go with a group on a bus to Chernikovsky School in Netanya. And we would have, in the last 3 years, it's been very well organized, which it wasn't in the beginning. We have the head of the English department, makes our assignment. We are there for 8 weeks. And we're there at the time that the students have to study to pass a certain exam. It's the senior, what they call the bagrut. The bagrut is like a final to show that you are able to converse and think in the language. You know, you might study French and can read it, but to express your thoughts is a different thing. And this is what they have to do, and their English should be correct. And this is where we help them. And I have to say, it's very rewarding. The children, people don't realize, Israel has become very expensive for the average person. And the schooling does not have the money that United States schooling has, because so much has had to go to the army. And if children need extra attention, the parents have to get tutors. And tutors are not cheap. And here we come, 18 Americans, and we're free. Parents are very grateful, and so are the children. And it's just a most rewarding type of thing.
Now, are you employed doing that? Do you employ yourself doing that type of work, all day long?
No, no, it's a half a day. We probably get on the bus about 8:15, or it's 7:45. Takes us 10 to 15 minutes to get to school. We leave usually 12:30, 1 o'clock, some morning 12. We come back to our hotel. We have lunch. We have a little free time. And then we have a modified ulpan, which is by choice. We study the language, Hebrew. And three different levels. You're not forced to. That's another thing that's very nice about this program. But I find it's really very beneficial to study a language while you're in the country and you can be speaking or around people around you are speaking. So that's generally our afternoon program. If we want to go into town and shop a little later, we can do that. In the evenings, some nights there's a lecture on politics or on specific things that are going on. And some nights, one night a week is folk dancing. Two nights are free. And one day a week, we tour around Israel. And it makes it a pretty full week. But, you know, I think it's wonderful just talking to people. You get a feeling for them, and you understand so much more of what's going on.
Are you conversant enough in the Hebrew language to speak conversational Hebrew to others?
Not quite. I understand a lot, but when you start to study Hebrew at my age, it's difficult. I become better as I stay there longer. And I'm pretty gutsy. I know I'll make mistakes, but I try. And that's part of me.
They're undoubtedly aware of the fact that you're not a native and that you're...
Well, you know, the whole community of Netanya, this program has been going on there for 12 years. We bring business to town. We're there we used to be 3 months, now 2 months. We are welcomed into the synagogue. We're treated like we're pretty special people. And that's kind of nice.
And you're also Jewish.
And of course. You know, I firmly believe there are some people who will send their money to Israel, but I think there comes a time when you have to put your body there. I really do. They need your support. If you would go into a home and talk to parents whose children are in the army, the stress that they live under, you just can't appreciate it unless you're right there seeing it. How the mothers and fathers worry the kid's a paratrooper. Paratroopers are being killed. Paratroopers collisions of helicopters. The day the helicopter accident when 16 were killed, if you would see the memorial that the school children held, the service that they held, this is a big high school, 2,000 kids, you couldn't hear a pin drop. And they had poems, and they had memorials, and everybody lit candles. These are high school children, but you know what? Those seniors are going to be in the army within a year. And it's like in Israel, everybody's your brother or sister or relative. It's a small country, and I feel with them. How many people went to the funerals? I went to one of the funerals of one of the paratroopers. These kinds of experiences are what locked me into Israel.
Do you have any fear physically of being involved in a riot or in an explosion? It seems it's such a small country. Are you afraid to get on a bus, for example?
I will tell you something. I survived 3 heart surgeries and 2 back surgeries. And when I'm in Israel, I'm happy with what I'm doing. And I've told my children, if I die there, just leave me. I don't worry about the possibilities. You can get the statistics in New York City, I think you're more apt to get it. Or Washington, D.C. Things are much worse. The problem that Americans, they hear only bad news from Israel. They don't hear the wonderful things. I have been in cities like Ashdod, where the population went from 60,000 to 140,000 people in 12 years. and you see 18 brand new neighborhoods. It looks like a California seashore town. It's just amazing.
How can the infrastructure keep up with that?
They are.
Situation.
The city planning in Ashdod is fantastic. It's fantastic. And in Netanya, it went from 75,000 to 125,000. And of course, it's just marvelous. But people, and how many new symphony orchestras are coming in? People, and so many, and theaters, culture. The Russians brought a lot of culture. I think they bring their problems, of course. But it's just amazing. You know, Israel has the highest degree of college-educated people of any country in the United States. In the world. Yes.
Do you think that the Arabs will ever tell the truth about wanting peace and be willing to work for it?
I don't feel in some ways I stay out of politics. However, Israelis are so accustomed to incidents. That doesn't mean they're right and that they're stressful, but there will, even if we have peace, it will never be 100% secure peace. Never. You have radicals at all times, and they have to continue living. I was traveling in Israel with when the bus explosion went on. And we had a trip scheduled down to Eilat, and then we went over to Jordan. A group of us on this program were going with our guide. And we were touring all day, driving down to Eilat, there was another explosion in Tel Aviv, you know. And our guide, he's the man in charge of us, Mr. Schiaponi, a very interesting man. He told us about it because we hadn't even heard about it. We were on the bus. And he says, look, he says, we had another tragedy here. He says, but I want to tell you something. I've been here almost all my life. I've raised my children. We've all been in the army. I was in the army 3 times. He says, this is life in Israel. We're not going to leave. He said, you just have to go on and make the best of every situation, because we as tourists were very shook up. What next? And you know, the way he expressed himself to us, I must say, he's a wonderful man. And he said, we're here for, I don't know, 4 or 5 generations. He says, we're not leaving. This is our country. He says, I've had 3 people in my family, 4 in the army, and I know many families in those same situations.
What do you think about the fact that Israel was encouraged to give up territory to the Arabs and being further urged to do so?
I honestly can't give you a good answer. I know that in talking to the students, I was very surprised. I don't know whether, now it may not be true today, but I remember 2 years ago, they said to me, we want peace. They said, we have to do whatever we can to have peace. I don't even know if it's possible. I mean, we have to pray. I firmly believe in prayer.
Would you like to make Aliyah yourself?
You know, I've thought about it. The fact that I have 12 grandchildren here has kind of kept me here. Quite frankly, there are a lot of things about Israel that I like very much. Even their attitude toward older people. You're special. You deserve respect because you're older. Now, some of these things are changing slowly, but in general, and their casual attitude, and they're very outspoken, and which can be good or bad, but it's no chachmas. They tell you things like it is. They don't try to be polite and lie to you. That's the Israeli way. I've thought about it, and the one thing that I realize when I go for 2 months or for 3 months at a time, which we did, and you're at a hotel and you're being served and your room is taken care of, is different from renting an apartment and staying there.
Well, the major thrust of immigration to Israel was as a result of the Holocaust.
The first thrust, yes.
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 How do you and or the Israelis feel about the German people today?
In Germany.
I'm not talking about the German Jews. I'm talking about the German population in general today. Today's population. How do you feel about it?
I had an interesting experience. I'll tell you, I think that they are trying in certain ways to make amends. And I think that the world has become so much smaller. Countries have to work together. Economically, you know, the European Union, what's it called, the economic union, that's very important. And a lot of Israel's trade and business needs Europe. What I personally feel is that, especially after coming back from Eastern Europe now, we have to be watchful and we have to be secure at all times. We must have an Israel. We must have an Israel, or we're in big trouble. And I get a little upset with people who don't want to know about Israel and what's going on there. Oh, I live in the United States, I'm going to support the JCC. I mean, everything's worthwhile. I don't say that. But if we don't have an Israel, nothing will be.
We won't have security.
We will not have security. And I really believe that those children in the army are putting their lives on the line, maybe for my great-grandchildren. That's why I'm such a fundraiser. Or I try.
What are your thoughts about Germans?
About Germans. Well, I was in Auschwitz 3 weeks ago. And I saw the efficiency with which they exterminated our people and the records that they kept. And I saw the ovens. And when they moved them over to from Auschwitz to Treblinka. And while I'm there, and I started, my body started to hurt, my leg hurt me, and it was a lot of tension, but we walk a lot. I decide to sit down on a bench. I see a lot of teenagers there. And I'm wondering, what are these teenagers doing here in Auschwitz? And I start to talk to one of the girls, and I said, do you speak English? She said, yes. I said, I'm surprised to see so many teenagers here. She says, we're sent here by the German government in our senior year to study what happened here. We spend 2 days touring and 2 days writing our feelings. And they stay for 2 weeks. And she said to me, do you think I'm guilty? She's a very bright, nice young girl. And I said, no, I don't think you're guilty. I said, but that a whole nation should be so influenced that it could commit genocide with such efficiency and feel it was the right thing to do is a terrible, that such a thing could happen is just so terrible. Horrible that we have to be aware. But I said, even so, I said, you have Bosnia today, you have Africa. I said, you still have rape killing going on. I said, so we always have to be aware that our fellow man is a person and equal to us.
And those were, that was a good experience for you.
Oh, yes, and for them.
And
it
for
was
them.
Two, another girl came
and
over.
You gave a, in my opinion, a proper answer.
Thank you.
I'm going to get away from Israel for a moment. Can you name any one person who influenced in your formative years regarding your goals, attitudes? Somebody that you looked up to, perhaps? A teacher? A relative?
You know, it's funny that I was a pretty good student in school. My debate teacher, Mr. Lay, I enjoyed being on the debate team, in the Latin class, and being in the theater. Any one teacher, I guess that was some of the things that I really liked. I think I was too busy in the early years of my marriage with the four children. What I look up to today is when I see, I just can't, again, back from this trip where I went on semester at sea, it was not an easy trip, and I see women 85 going on this trip, or couples in their early 80s. There's a man that comes to Israel and his wife married 60 years. This program, I think that's so wonderful today that with modern medicine, people are living longer, but not only should you hopefully live longer, you should be involved. You should not sit in front of the television or bemoan, but whatever happens, get out there and live.
But something motivated you to be involved, especially with Israel, to begin with. What?
Oh, I think it was my mother.
What was the initial
my mother. I always felt the Jews have to help Jews, and Israel, that's all I can say.
You must have had a wonderful family life to have done what you've done and to become as interested in.
Well, it was more,
to others.
My father was the businessman. He didn't have much time for, he kept the garage open from 7 to 7. He didn't